Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world's changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. Just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me.
Hey, good morning, good morning, good morning. This is your host, Dr. Terry Mason. The show, The Doctor in the House, and it's heard always right here on AM 1690 WVON. And I am really, really delighted to have a wonderful show as always. I want to also welcome my co-host, Dr. Thomas Britt. Good morning, Dr. Britt. Good morning.
How are you, sir? Can you hear me okay?
I hear you just fine.
Okay.
What I want to also do is let us know that we've let everyone know that we've got a very, very, very special show. Want to say good morning to Ms. Rashima Britt down in Arkansas and listen to all our Arkansas listeners and Texas listeners. But we've got a really great show we want you to talk about today. We're going to introduce a new term. I'm going to actually let my guest, Dr. Nance, introduce this term. I've never heard of this term before that she's using in terms of describing what they do. So my guest today is Ms. Deborah Mintz, who is a previvor. That's the new term, previvor, and an oncogeneticist. And I think I'm saying that to our generalist. She was an oncogeneralist, but she's now become a previvor. And we're going to talk about what previvorship means. She's at the University of Illinois Cancer Center. And she is really, this is going to be fascinating. Also, I'd like to introduce Laura Belay, who is a genetic counselor for the Hereditary Cancer Program at the University of Illinois, Chicago. So we've got two very, very dynamic people here. But before we get to them, we're going to go straight to our what we do every Sunday morning before we get into the meat of our show, which is our update on COVID. So Dr. Britt, you want to take it away and give us our COVID update?
Yeah, this is our COVID update. For today, 6th February 2022, it's brought to you by the Health Policy Institute of Chicago. We want to do a little something different, and I'll try to get through it as quick as I can. Today is the first Sunday of Black History Month. Black History Month was originally launched in February 1926 as a week-long celebration, which was initiated by Carter G. Woodson. So today I have a tribute. The tribute today is very, very apropos. The tribute is for Dr. Kizmekia Corbett, PhD and Master of Science. Dr. Corbett is an African-American female receiving her post-baccalaureate degrees in immunology and microbiology from the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. She served as a viral immunologist for 6 years with the Vaccine Research Center at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, which, of course, is headed by Dr. Anthony Fauci. Dr. Corbett, here's the big deal. Dr. Corbett led the team responsible for developing Moderna's mRNA virus early in 1921. She is now an assistant professor of immunology and infectious disease at Harvard University and the Harvard Radcliffe Institute since 2021. Newsflash, those of you who are taking the Moderna vaccine, you should be comforted by the fact that a sister was principal developer of this particular vaccine. We have another tribute for those of my colleagues and family down in Little Rock, Arkansas. The tribute is to Annie Abrams. ABC News on February the 1st last week aired a national tribute to Annie Abrams beginning the first week of Black History Month. Annie Abrams is a retired Little Rock educator and activist and a civil rights icon, intricately involved in the desegregation of Central High School, the renaming of several streets, especially High Street was renamed to Martin Luther King. Breaking news, 42% of adults and 70% of booster eligible now say they have received the booster. The FDA panel is scheduled to meet on the 15th of February to consider the Pfizer vaccine for children less than five. If approved, the vaccine may be distributed by the end of February. 31% of parents of children five and under may allow vaccination right away. 29% say they will wait and see, and 26% say they definitely would not allow their child to be vaccinated. COVID-19 cases. Right now, we are above 74 million with more than 904,000 deaths. Note, as of February the 3rd, 3,000 deaths occurred with an average 7-day average of 2,623. Cases and deaths in select states. California, 8.6 million with 81,000 deaths. Texas, 6.3 million with 80,000 deaths. Florida, 5.6 million with 66,000 deaths. Illinois, 2.96 million with 35,000 deaths. And the state of Arkansas, 792,000 with 9,000 deaths. Vaccine progress. We got a couple of terms we need to be familiar with. They may change because as the science change, we have to change some of the things that we put out. Fully vaccinated occurs 2 weeks after receiving both doses of the vaccine. Fully protected occurs when you have received both doses as well as the booster. Now, why should we take the booster? Significant increased levels of protection against severe disease from COVID and its variants, including Omicron, thereby decreasing hospitalizations and deaths. You can get the disease, but will the disease be fatal? Will the disease have a lot of morbidity? If you do the booster, probably not. Booster eligibility. This is based on which vaccine you receive. If you receive the Pfizer, everyone older than 12 years can get the booster. If you receive Moderna, everyone older than 18 years can get the booster. If you receive the Johnson & Johnson, everyone older than 18 can get the booster. When do you get the booster? Usually about 5 months after completing your vaccine series. COVID and diabetes. People with diabetes have serious complications with COVID-19. Complications are also worse if you have diabetes and heart disease. People with type 1 or gestational diabetes might be at increased risk of severe disease from COVID. If you're diabetic, get your diabetes under control. There's a question about the vaccination in pregnancy. Professional organizations have reported no evidence that COVID-19 vaccination adversely impacts fertility or reproduction. In fact, if you are considering pregnancy, you should be vaccinated. Chronic diseases impact on COVID-19. Chronic, common, and pre-existing disease increase morbidity and mortality. Obesity should also be included here, as research has shown that obesity worsens the outcome from COVID. And lastly, I always say this, we can and we must control this pandemic. Please, please, please do the following. Get tested, isolate or quarantine as necessary. Get vaccinated, plus get your booster if you are eligible. Continue to wear your mask in crowded places. Continue with physical distances. Hand washing should be continued. Clean the surfaces that you frequently use. Lastly, vigorously seek medical and healthy approaches to control your chronic diseases. That's my report, Dr. Mason. I give it back to you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Britt. Now, we're going to go ahead now, and I am going to ask our guest from the University of Illinois Cancer Center to really talk about this. But I want to also remind you, I want you to take this name and number down if you want to have any more information. The information is, if you want to have an appointment, you can always call 312-355-3248. And we're going to go ahead and get right into our discussion now. And I'm just really, really happy to have with us Dr. Mantz. Did I say that right, Dr. Mantz?
Dr. Mantz, yeah. Yeah, okay. Dr. Mason, I told you I'd be on your show someday.
Yes, here we are. So Dr. Mantz, you want to talk to us a bit just about what this program is, what you do.
Yeah.
And what is this, that term that you talked about?
Right. It's really interesting, the term oncogeneralist. And it's a combination of oncologist and generalist, because I like to tell my patients that I'm not a primary care doctor. I'm not an oncologist, but I'm somewhere in between. And I help with the in-between and help out cancer patients at any stage in their life, primarily see patients through Miles Square Health Center, which is on the south side, technically, FUHC, which is a federally qualified health center. They get governmental money to treat underserved populations, largely racial and ethnic minority population, low income. So we see the cancer patients, again, at any stage, because a cancer survivor is deemed a cancer survivor once they're diagnosed. You don't know how long that cancer has been there. So I'll see patients who are in treatment, just starting treatment, just finishing, or 5 or 10 years out of treatment. And it's really about helping these patients out with just all of their complex needs, helping them to keep track of their cancer and watching it for any type of recurrence, and then watching, doing their preventive cancer screening tests like mammograms, colonoscopies, pap smears, and things like that. Helping out with chronic condition management as well, because sometimes some of that gets out of control a little bit during cancer treatment because it's not really the focus of the patient. So we help to stay on track with things. And also connecting patients to resources, anything they might need internally in the hospital and external organizations. I do want to highlight one that we are strongly connected to. It's called Wellness House. They offer free programs for cancer survivors based in the suburbs and at UIC. They have another site, and they're having a great event on the 24th. It's called What I Learned from Talking to People of Color About Cancer, featuring African-American influencer Jodi-Anne Burry. That's B-U-R-E-Y. You can look it up. So that should be a great event. And they connect patients with cancer with lots of different things, exercise, nutrition, and therapy, support groups, things like that. So it's really a comprehensive position, not go generalist. And we take care of a lot of different dimensions of the needed care for cancer survivors.
Well, this is wonderful. Now, we talked about another term at the beginning of the show. You want to tell us what that one means?
Yeah. So I also, in the whole realm of cancer prevention, we'll also see previvors, and this is patients who have been identified through genetic testing to carry a mutation in their genes, which Laura Belay will talk a little bit more about what that means. But they have mutations that mean they're at a higher risk for developing cancer. So someone who has a certain type of mutation may be more likely to get colorectal cancer or breast cancer or ovarian cancer in their lifetime based on these genes that are inherited through the family. And I myself was diagnosed in 2012 carrying a genetic mutation called BRCA1. And there are a couple of ways to manage that, and that doctors have, you know, methods to manage that cancer risk, which include more frequent screening or risk-reducing medications, or even if you want to do what I did and have risk-reducing surgeries as well. So
hold the point.
Yeah.
Stop and take a short commercial break, but okay. Don't forget where you were. And we want to invite the others to speak a bit, the others to speak a bit too, but we want to get this information out. So you're listening to Doctor in the House, and we're having a conversation on our first Sunday with the University of Illinois Cancer Center. So stay with us, and we'll be right back after this.
Wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking. Time for thinking ahead. The world's changed so very much. What it used to be, there's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children to jump the very best they can, the world won't get no better if we just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now.
All right, we're back, and we are in the University of Illinois Cancer Center Sunday, and we have a wonderful guest who is just about to start, Dr. Mantz, who is just about to start her journey, her personal journey, and to tell us what about genetic screening is important, how did they do it, and how did it work for her? Dr. Mantz, you go right ahead.
Yeah, I was just talking a little about this term you brought up, Dr. Mason, previvor, meaning that you're at a high risk for developing cancer in your lifetime based on your inherited genetics, the genetics through your family tree. So my sister was 45 years old when she was diagnosed with breast cancer. And it being so young, she had genetic testing and found she carried this BRCA1 mutation. And this is one of the highest risks predisposition of the mutations that you can find. It's breast cancer risk up to 80% in some papers and in some people. And then ovarian cancer risk, I was told up to 40 to 50%. So that
now, let's go back and say, what does this percent mean?
This percent means, so in the general population, a woman's breast cancer risk is about 12%, 1 in 8. We've seen that, you know, in the news and all over the place. So, but it's 12% for an average risk woman, but I was at in 70 to 80% risk. So that is significantly elevated several times over the average woman risk. Ovarian cancer is even more striking because an average woman's risk is only 1.6%. And the risk that I was quoted that I carried was 50 to 60%, which is why I decided to move forward and take action to have risk-reducing surgeries so that I have very low chances of developing these types of cancers.
So when you say risk-reducing surgery, what do you mean?
I mean that I had my breasts removed and my ovaries, as well as my uterus and cervix, were all removed as well more recently. So I felt empowered to take action and take this into my hands. There are some other alternatives. You can, women can continue to get enhanced screening with mammograms as well as breast MRIs. But the ovarian cancer risk is a little trickier because a lot of ovarian cancers present too late. That treatment is hard and not as effective. So it is highly recommended to remove the ovaries and the uterus. And with BRCA1, that's by the age of 35.
So this is obviously takes a lot of discussion. And when we talk about these risks, are these the same for all women when you get this kind of information, or is it different in some women and others?
There can be a little variance among women. There are many, many BRCA1 mutations. BRCA1 is one gene, and each gene carries a lot of places that the mutation can be. Again, Lara Belay may be able to describe this a little bit more eloquently than I, but some of those mutations do confer a higher risk than others, but we're still working on teasing out all those details.
Well, that's amazing. So that sounds like you did a major thing by eliminating these, taking those organs out, having those organs all removed. So you have both breasts removed, your uterus and your ovaries removed. Is that right?
Yeah, primarily the ovaries. It's actually interesting. It's thought that most ovarian cancers originate in the fallopian tubes. Those are tubes that connect the ovaries to the uterus. So they're doing some experiments with women as far as removing just the tubes as opposed to the ovaries so that women can retain their ovarian function and the hormones that you get from the ovaries so that you don't go into early menopause. So some interesting research.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Could you speak briefly on this triple negative thing that we hear about from time to time?
Yeah. So African-American women are more likely to develop cancers that are triple negative. And so triple negative means that there are receptors on the breast cancer cells, and sometimes they will bind up and be receptive, meaning we can use treatments to block estrogen and progesterone. But sometimes these receptors are positive and they will respond to certain therapies, and sometimes they won't. And those cancers require chemotherapy, are a little bit more aggressive types of cancers and more likely to recur. So, and that's, again, those triple negative, when those three receptors, the ER, PR, estrogen, and progesterone receptors, and another one called HER2, when those are negative, then that's a more aggressive type cancer. And yes, it's more frequent in African-American women.
Do we have any reason to understand why?
You know, that might be a better question for Lara, but it may be kind of in the lineage of African-American ethnicity. So it's really, I don't believe it's well understood. Lara, can you help me out?
Well, I think the answer to that, Dr. Mason, is actually pretty complicated. And the shortest answer is we don't really know. There are a lot of research, opportunities going on out there right now to see if we can figure that out more, because of course, when we see something affecting one population more than another, and especially our patient population that we want to make sure have all the options they can, we want to find out why that is. And, you know, there have been suggestions and research studies going on saying, you know, could it be something to do with, you know, our genetics and our lineage, but also could it be more complicated? Could it be, you know, social pressures or environmental impacts and things like that? So in short, we don't know for sure, Dr. Mason, but just to add to Dr. Britt's question, what we know about triple negative breast cancer, like Dr. Mann said, is that it is more aggressive. And so today on the theme of us talking about, you know, early screening and reaching out to your family members and figuring out what's in your family. With triple negative breast cancer, it's more important that we can detect it as early as possible so that women can get any options for treatment and, you know, get healthy again after their cancer diagnosis.
Okay, so this is very important information. The triple negative. Now, I want to make sure that the listeners understands what that means. So there are three things that are missing.
Yeah, so it's all about the types of receptors on the cancer cells. And this is
let's back up now. What is a receptor? What does that mean?
Good question. So receptors, all the cancer cells, cells in our body all carry receptors. And so these are displayed on the outside of cells of each different type of tissue, the breast tissue being one. And they will receive and respond to certain hormones or certain components in the blood that are circulating. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, so you're saying that some people do not have these receptors?
Yeah, in some cases, these receptors, there are not as many of them as in certain other types of cancers. So it creates a differential in how the particular type of tumor in the breast reacts to therapies.
So if they're negative, or as Dr. Britt mentioned, triple negative, they don't have any receptors. What's the difference between the ones who have no receptors and maybe have two receptors?
Yeah, that's a good question for an oncologist. But tumors that have very, like we'd say, weakly staining, meaning like that the staining is looking for those receptors and those things on the cells, they're treated a lot of times like they're negative, but I'm not sure exactly where that threshold lies. How many receptors do you have to have to create, you know, make it be positive versus negative?
So for a patient, they need to have that kind of counseling to mm-hmm. let them know what they have.
So they can
make whatever arrangements they need with their mm-hmm. genetic counselors or whatever. Let's go, you know, Mrs. Blake, how do you counsel patients with this kind of information? What do you tell them?
Great question. And as we talk about cancer prevention today and, you know, helping get the word out in our communities, one of my biggest words of advice to our communities and our patients is to open up communication about cancer in your trusted community, whether that's your family members, your medical community, your church community, because the more we can openly talk about what's going on in our families and our communities, the more we can be aware of what risks we might have. So Dr. Mance was sharing with us, you know, some experiences her family had been through where someone was diagnosed with cancer. And because they were able to share that with their family members, other people in their family can take steps and make decisions and talk to their own doctors or genetic counselors about how they can choose what's right for them, whether that's surgery or just extra checkups to be able to protect themselves against cancer in the future. So, you know, to give you a really quick answer, Dr. Mason, I'd say the best thing I think we can do is to start opening communication about cancer in our family when it's present.
Well, you know, I just want to put out the number right now for people who have a question or want to talk about genetic screening. You can call 312, write that down, 312, and that's 355. If I'm saying this right, what's the number? Do you have the number right offhand?
Yeah, I do. It's 312-355-3248. And that gets you to kind of the hub for our high risk or cancer genetics program at UI Health. And UI Health, we are a community hospital. We, like Dr. Mance was saying, we see patients from all over the city with all different types of insurance. So, you know, if you're talking to your family members and you realize, you know, that there are multiple people in one side of your family with cancer of similar types, like breast cancer or colon cancer, or if anyone in your family was diagnosed younger with cancer, under age 50, a little bit younger, like Dr. Mann shared about her sister, that's a little young to be getting cancer. And we wonder, you know, could this be something that your family or you could be at higher risk for? So, you know, give us a call if that's something you want to look more into.
And if you got a call for our doctors here, you can always give us a call while we're on the air to 773-591-1690. That's 773-591-1690. And we'll be happy to take your call and give it to the appropriate person on the panel to answer. But this whole notion, these receptors, because we hear this all the time, and it's even in the commercials. And I think people sometimes hear the commercials and don't know what that means. For those people who are receptor negative or receptor positive, is it either you have all the receptors negative or all the receptors positive?
Yeah, and that's it. There can be some receptors that will be positive, some will be negative. You might have one positive and two negative, or two positive, one negative. As long as the hormone receptor is positive, it's then receptive to certain types of therapies that improve the outcomes for breast cancer survivors.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Let me stick in another question. When we talk about we want to counsel people, we counsel the women because we have some data. We get the data because we screen. So the question is, when should the African-American female, the Hispanic female, vis-a-vis white females, when should they get screened for breast cancer?
Yeah, so that's a complex question as well, that you would think has a more straightforward answer. But there are several different organizations that make recommendations. I would say definitely go. For African-American women, probably around 40 to 45, talk to your doctor about making that decision to start having mammograms. There are some sources that say you can wait till 50 for a woman who is just of average risk, and that's a woman who does not have a family history of breast cancer and a woman who doesn't have other risk factors for breast cancer. So it's a little bit tricky, but like Lara was saying, it's so important to know what's going on in your family history. If you have any family member with a breast cancer, triple negative or otherwise, any type of breast cancer, that you should be getting mammograms 10 years ahead of when they developed their breast cancer. Or probably by about age 45.
The other question is.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. The other question is, so I want the listeners to be real clear about this. Can they get tested for these receptors before they have their breast removed? Or is that in the blood? Or is this only something you find out after you've had surgery? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when a woman is identified to have a breast cancer tumor on images, pictures like on a mammogram or an ultrasound, they will take a little piece of that tumor out. It's called a biopsy. And on that biopsy, they will then run that in the lab and determine if those receptors are present or absent. So women, just your average woman can't go, that doesn't have a tumor. There's nothing to take a piece of to run to see. But really these receptors, how they're important is in determining the best way to treat them.
So the biopsies are how you extract the information to make sure that you have the knowledge of whether these receptors are present or not. There's nothing you can do ahead of time or before a biopsy. But we do still want people, women, to get their mammography because that's still the first step. Is that right?
Yeah, that's the first step.
So how do you counsel women? Because how many people come into your center who can tell you that they had a person who had a person or somebody, a family member that had breast cancer? And I'd imagine the same things. I don't know if this goes for men, too, because men do get breast cancer as well, that had these receptors. How would they know?
How would they know what their risk is?
How would they know unless their family member tells them? And if so, I'm saying this to say that if somebody has a family member that does have a positive biopsy and they do get tissue, I'm suggesting that maybe what we should also ask them to do is make sure that they find out whether or not they had receptors and make sure they understand what that means.
Yes, that would be very helpful information for us, because these cancers do appear a little differently and are treated differently. So it's always good information to have as much information from your family members about any types of cancers that you can. Now, myself, I do treat mostly cancer survivors. So it's women who have had cancer, but some of them, you know, have had a cancer that's not breast cancer, but still have a family history of multiple family members with maybe an early age breast cancer. And for those women, I will definitely go through a risk assessment and talk to them about that, their family history, but also other factors like the hormones they've been exposed to during their life, and to determine what their risk level is for breast cancer, so that we can treat them appropriately. We can manage that risk through, maybe we need to do additional screening tests like a breast ultrasound or an MRI. So we determine who would benefit the most from having that additional testing.
This is very good information. I want to make sure we give out the number for people who are looking to get more information about screening, and then maybe they heard parts of the show, they didn't get a chance to hear everything, but you can call 312-355-3248 to get more information. That's 312-355-3248 to get more information and take advantage of it. It's right here at the University of Illinois, right here in Chicago. You can get this information. It's really, really important that you know. I know some people listening might say, oh, this is just some another way they want to get to take my breast off or take my uterus off. No, that's not what it is at all. It's really to try and understand so you can understand how to make a better decision. Would that be a proper characterization?
Yeah, I would definitely say that, Dr. Mason. And I think one of the most important things to consider in this is that, you know, especially in genetic counseling and in the clinics that Dr. Manston and I work in, we're not here to necessarily give people extra treatment or extra surgeries, but instead we're here to help them gather information about their family, help them be educated on what risks they might have, and because of that, what extra things might be available to them, so we can help them make decisions on what's best for them and their family. So, you know, just because you come to a genetic counseling appointment or an appointment in Dr. Mann's high-risk clinic doesn't mean you have to do anything. It just means that we're here to help you figure out what your options are and, you know, make those decisions that are best for you.
And I think that's really important for people to understand that this is what this is really about. It's about trying to get information to help you make better decisions. And that's why I'm so glad that we have this. So physically, where are you located? And people, because we put out the information, the phone number, but where are you physically located?
So we are both located in clinics on the UI Health campus. Dr. Manston, her clinic is out of the Miles Square Community Health Center. Like she said, the main location is on Roosevelt, where Roosevelt meets with Wood Street. And we, for the genetics oncology clinic that I work in, are located right next to the UI Health Hospital or UIC Hospital on the first floor in the oncology clinic. So patients are seen in both those locations to help assessing what's going on in their family and how we can help them protect themselves against cancer if they're ready or interested.
And I also want to tell people, if you have any questions, please give us a call here on the station. We only have a few minutes left, and I want you to have the advantage of having these ladies, these physicians, and these professionals answer your question. That number again, 773-591-1690. That's 773-591-1690. You can also, this show is also being streamed live on Facebook Live, so you can tell somebody they can tune in and look at it and watch it with us. But it's really, really important that you get this information. And then once you get it, don't hoard it. Pass it on to members of your family, other women in your family, your daughters, your aunts, your grandmothers, so that they can avail themselves of this information. And basically, you're not obligated to do anything other than listen. The old idea is just to get an idea of how much of this cancer runs in your family. And then what can you do about it to make things better for yourself and not be afraid? The number again, 312-355-3248. Doctor, are there more things, because you mentioned uterus. Can you talk a little more about the uterus and the ovaries? Because the breast is pretty simple, but how do you go about ascertaining what's happening with the uterus and the ovaries?
Yeah, so the recommendation for at least for BRCA1 and BRCA2 mutation carriers is to remove the ovaries and the tubes, fallopian tubes. But the uterus is more of a personal decision. It's depending on the doctor you see. Some are more comfortable taking it out than others, and patients can definitely say whether they want to have that remain intact or not. There are slightly higher risks of certain types of complications from removing the uterus and the cervix. But also, if you remove the uterus and cervix, those organs can't get cancer. So it's a little bit more borderline there in patient decision. But the ovaries and tubes are the strong recommendation to remove.
And are there any things that people themselves can do other than what we've just talked about? Are there dietary things or exercise things or anything else that people can do to decrease their risk?
Sure. There are always those things you can do. Lifestyle is so important. Like you say, diet, exercise, sleep, all very important. Lifestyle makes such a difference in how patients' risk level for cancer is, and if cancer were to occur, how the response is to that cancer. So I always encourage all my patients to eat a healthy, mostly plant-based diet. I really like the Mediterranean diet, what I recommend for patients, because it can also help to work with many chronic conditions as well. And then physical activity, making sure you're getting out, getting active for, you know, your whole body, not just your muscles and your blood and your heart, but also your bones and just overall wellness.
Well, that's always so important. Dr. Britt and I always stress this. The dietary piece, because it's very, very important. And many of our people have such horrible dietary habits, maybe not of their own making, but certainly one that we can use to improve. And I want to thank you as we move now to the last minute of the show. I want to thank you both for being on. And I think this was extraordinarily helpful. And I want you to be encouraged to continue doing the work that you're doing, because it's so important. And our folks down in Arkansas, they can call too and get more information if they like to. You do phone conferences, is that right?
Yes, we do telehealth. We primarily see patients within Illinois. But definitely you can call that number and can be routed to us in the Survivorship Clinic as well.
And also, just to give another plug for any of your listeners that are in others, you can actually look on findagenetickcounselor.com. It's a national organization that can help you find a genetic counselor or genetic team in any state.
Hey, Dr. Mason, thank you.
Well, we're all out of time. I'm sorry, Dr. Britt, but we are out of time. It's at 11 o'clock. Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Dr. Britt. Thank you, Rashima. Thank you, doctors. And until next week at the same time and station, may God continue to bless each and every one of you with continued health and strength as I leave you now in peace.
As I ponder my existence, what's my purpose?